Join Big Daddy on the Big Daddy Liberty Show every Friday mornings at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 101.9 High FM. The Big Daddy Liberty Show is the only show in South Africa that discusses current affairs, politics, and economic topics through the lens of liberty. Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Molo Sanbonani, hello, how's it? Shalom. Welcome to another lively episode of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. That's right, the Big Daddy Liberty Show with me, yours truly, your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. Guys, welcome back. I'm so happy to have you back on the show. I hope you enjoy the show as we, every week, look at what made the headlines. Of course, you know, that the show always does track some of the big news items and provides a bit of analysis and opinion at the end of the news week. And of course, for the major segment today, the major interview, I had a very special guest, someone who's not a stranger to the South African media landscape, a one David Bullard, who any of you who sort of read the Daily Friend, that's www.dailyfriend.co.za, will be quite aware of. And of course, he's also quite prolific in other media spaces, such as Politics Web and the like. Guys, welcome to the show. As I said, I'm coming to you from a very special location. I'm not in the Chai FM studios. This is pre-recorded. I'm actually traveling the country. I'm in Cape Town right now, and it's for Big Daddy Liberty business, so to speak. Remember, you can always follow all my exploits and my travels by just following me online on my social media, whether you're on Facebook or Twitter, Instagram or YouTube. Just search Big Daddy Liberty and you can see exactly what your favorite fat boy is getting up to. Guys, I'm going to jump straight into it. As always on the show, we begin by looking at the big news headlines. You know, what made the news in the week and what you should be following as we not only follow what has happened, but also what will be happening and what we project likely may be happening going forward. So we're going to begin the show with that. But remember that we always have a major interview, a major segment after the after the big break, where we're going to be chatting to Mr. David Bullard. This is a name, as I said, who really needs no introduction, a very prolific, name in the media space. As I spoke to him about the issue of free speech, you know, this is a fundamental freedom in any society. And the question I asked him really is, are South Africans' ability to speak freely, to articulate thoughts, whether it's controversial or not, are those freedoms under attack? And if they are, where are those attacks coming from? Are they broadsides from the right or the left? And really, are we still encouraging a culture of South Africans, you know, 8 million South Africans, 11 languages, many cultures. Are we still encouraging a culture of an open society where we can talk freely, and exchange ideas and even, you know, share controversial ideas, rebut those controversial ideas if they're wrong? So that's the conversation we're going to be, having after the break with David Bullard. And of course, the last segment of the show always looks at, you know, what's been trending on social media. And I'm going to introduce a new segment this week, what I like to call the Moomish of the Week. Moomish being let's call it a slang word, South African slang word for, you know, the loser of the week, so to speak. So we're going to have a look at who the Moomish of the Week is going to be in our last segment. But guys, without further ado, let me look at some of the top stories that I have been tracking throughout this week and I think are actually very significant for you, the individual, you and your family. The first one is a bit of a funny one. Insofar as, you know, it almost speaks of, you know, like it almost reads rather like a James Bond-esque, espionage type story. And I'm really sort of holding back a giggle because really what it is two media houses, fighting it out on the papers of the various newspapers and online. This is the Daily Maverick Group. This is an online news source. Very popular one at that. And of course the Independent Group of newspapers. In this case, the likes of the Star, the Cape Argus, Cape Times, etc. It all revolves around a story that the Independent put out about alleged illicit payments, if you will, that are being done by the Daily Maverick, paying students across the country to write hit pieces against individuals who are seen as being pro, in inverted commas, transformation, or seen as being, you know, pro-black or whatever the case may be. And the allegations made by one Modiba, funny name, basically revolved around this idea that the Daily Maverick, according to him, was paying him and other students 500 rand, I believe weekly was the allegation, in sort of very, almost brown envelope type payments, you know, where a vehicle, a car, described as Toyota Corollas from the Daily Maverick, according to the allegation, would rock up and meet them at funny places across Johannesburg, like petrol stations and, you know, in lobbies, at malls, et cetera, et cetera, in order to hand over these payments that are for quote unquote research and, data costs, according to Modiba. And what he basically alleges is that they were being paid to write unfavorable pieces, against certain people that the Daily Maverick, asked or told or suggested that they write, badly about. Now, not an ounce of evidence is offered in this article at all. It's basically just a naked allegation. And the Independent just wrote it up. They wrote it up with very little introspection, with very little verification, with very little even just digging into the veracity of these claims. And now it's been this almost amusing back and forth between journalists from the Daily Maverick and, of course, Iqbal Survey and his employees at the Independent, you know, basically just, you know, allegations and counter-allegations. What I really found funny was this. It does point to us the sheer, the illusion that our media sometimes tries to create of neutrality, that somehow they're all neutral, they don't take positions, and that they broadly have this camaraderie amongst them based on a certain set of ethics. On paper, yes, that may very well be the case. But in real terms, I always say this, you know, journalists hold particular viewpoints. Journalists hold particular grudges in some cases. But what we shouldn't then see devolve in the media space is journalists making accusations against other journalists without a single shred of evidence. Because that not only undermines that particular media group that you may be targeting with the unfounded allegations, but actually it undermines the entire South African media industry, which is very important. I mean, this should not be happening. I mean, the media play a critical role in any free and open society. I mean, they are the fourth estate, meant to hold those in power I nearly said to ransom, but they're meant to hold checks and balances and hold them to account. And you know, when you then see this sort of circus play out between media groups, it's actually, it bodes ill for the industry. And I hope, as a Daily Maverick are, that they're going to take these gentlemen to court so that this Mr. Modiba has to make these claims under oath in a court of law. And we can see exactly if there is an agenda, what it is, or maybe if he's telling the truth, you know, hard evidence can maybe come out. And then you can see a cleaning of house in that regard. So I'll be watching that one quite keenly because it speaks to whether we can trust the information we read in our newspapers. The other one I want to quickly go into is, you know, the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane. Oh my goodness, did she not get a bloody nose from the North High Court, basically invalidating her investigation into President Cyril Ramaphosa's ANC presidential campaign. Now, this is a full bench of the High Court, you know, three judges, you know, Judge President Dunstan Mlambo, along with Judges Keo Khile, Matojane, and of course, Raylene, Kately. These are, you know, seasoned judges who basically just, in a scathing judgment, ordered not only that Mkhwebane found against her, but also ordered her to pay the legal costs of the other respondents in the particular case. I mean, the judgment was absolutely, it was not only declared invalid, declared invalid, but they were set aside. This has big implications for her other work. You know, remember, this is not the first judgment that is found against this new public protector. And you've got to admit, you know, whether you like her or not, I think this is just a question of her competence. And it's becoming a little disconcerting when a public protector makes findings, and every now and then when they're taken under review by those, you know, affected by her findings, that she loses. That kind of speaks to whether, you know, and asks real questions around, is this lady really competent for her job? I mean, this is now her, I think, sixth finding against her. And that's quite significant because, you know, yeah, I don't know. Not that I don't know. It's just, it's disconcerting. It's really disconcerting that the lady charged with protecting the rights of South Africans, rendering quality investigations that come up with findings and rectify issues around our governance generally, is literally getting bruised up by the courts, who in some cases are pretty much kind of calling her incompetent, and having a scant understanding of the Constitution. So this does not bode well for a lady who's currently right now facing a parliamentary inquiry into her, which may actually see her lose her job. So I'll be definitely watching this one because it has major implications, as I said, for you and me as South Africans. Guys, I'm going to head to my first ad break, but after the break, we have Mr. David Bullard, who is a writer and media personality, and we're going to be chatting to him about free speech.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
My guest today, someone who is a contributor and a writer for The Daily Friend and other publications, but really he's someone who in a way needs no introduction because he's been in our newspapers and our media space for a very long time. And someone who I definitely used to follow and still follow the writings of. I'm talking, of course, about Mr. David Bullard, who's joining me today. David, welcome to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted that you're here in a decent part of the country as well.
Excellento, excellento. David, what I really wanted us to look at today is just perhaps what's going to underpin this conversation is the idea of free speech. It seems to be under assault all over the world. And for someone who's cut their teeth in the media space, who is a seasoned writer like you, I'm sure some of the machinations we're seeing play out around the world, especially in your sort of developed society where a lot of the bad ideas that seem to be consuming young people these days, you know, these postmodernist ideas, yoked to the left, which really see an assault on very sort of well-established liberal values that a lot of these societies are founded on, are gaining traction, and you're beginning to see them affect people in various spaces, primarily in the media, and of course at large in the free speech space, period. I butchered that, but essentially what I'm trying to get to is one has to begin to pay attention now to the growing body, the growing voices, if you will, of these individuals who absolutely hate the idea that individuals who say things that they disagree with should be given the freedom to say those things. Is that not a problem we're seeing right now?
Well, I think, you know, to an extent, we're a little bit further along the path now in that the fight back has begun and is beginning to carry quite a lot of passengers with it. We've seen the sort of big woke revolution. We've seen stuff, particularly I think in the UK, where people are deplatformed from Oxford or from other universities. People lose their jobs because they made an unfortunate comment about a female colleague or something like that. And I think that there are still publications, I'm happy to say, which will actually ridicule this. I mean, we obviously look at the Guardian as being the ultimate ridiculous woke publication in the UK, but you know, every time they do something stupid, and I think the latest one we were discussing before we came on air was an article by Suzanne Moore, which I think has had an enormous amount of signatures because she's now not regarded as being fit for purpose because she has bigoted trans views, which is crazy. But then you having just as many people reading The Telegraph, reading The Spectator, reading The Times, reading other things who are objecting to that sort of Nazism, actually, is really what it is. You will think this way, or we will beat you up, and we will get you, we will hound you off social media, we'll do all these other horrible things to you. And I think the important thing is to say, well, actually, I don't give a damn frankly, what do you do? Because these are my opinions. I do strongly endorse the fact that if you committed slander, libel, whatever one wants to call it, within the law, then definitely you should be punished. But if you were expressing an opinion which just happens to sort of sit well, not sit well with certain people, well, that's awfully bad luck.
Mm. No, and I really do agree with you, David, because to a large extent, you know, we're losing the ability as society to just transmit ideas to, and which includes, by the way, if there are bad ideas in society, the ability to actually not only hear them, but have the freedom to rebut.
Absolutely. I want to hear them. Yeah. I want to hear them because I want to know they exist. Yeah. I want to know what I'm up against. Yeah. I don't want sort of, you know, some underground movement saying dreadful things and thinking dreadful things and planning dreadful things, right, because it could lead on to that. I want to know if there are lunatics out there. Mm-hmm. And I want to have and I also want to have, as Douglas Murray quite rightly says in his books and his articles, I want to be open to the possibility that if I'm talking to somebody with whom I think I disagree, that they may be persuasive enough to make me realize that I was wrong. Mm. And I think, no, actually, you do have a good point. I mean, a classic one of this week will be the suggestion that there's an amnesty for all those involved in state capture. Now, the four gentlemen who've proposed that, I know one of them moderately well, and I know of the others. I don't think they're idiots. I think it's fair to say that these guys have put a fair amount of thought into it. If you read the full document, which I haven't read the full document, I've read the amended version or the shortened version on Daily Maverick, they make some very good points. My gut feel doesn't like it, but I'm open to being persuaded. Now, that I think is the important thing.
I'm going to digress a little bit, but we're going to come back to this because I wanted to anchor our conversation. Let's look at what societies look like when they do have a repressive state. Which is ironically what some of these trendy lefties, I call them, really, are asking for, the idea that the state should be able to control speech, decide who can and can't say things. But let's look at the sort of logical conclusion of this. A one society called China, with a big, bad government that suppresses people's ability to speak freely. The consequences of these were very much born, or rather, we saw the consequences of this play out in a very real way with this current coronavirus, which is sort of spreading around the world, where the free flow of information and the idea that those who were the canaries in the coal mine, so to speak, the medical staff in that part of the world, who had been warning the state that, look, this thing is a big problem, they're struggling with it. I mean, one doctor, for example, dear listener, I'm not going to try and pronounce the name, but I'll just say this one doctor who was at the forefront of finding out that this disease is a big problem, or this virus is a big problem, and that people are dying from it. He himself eventually died from the virus, but he was suppressed. I mean, he was literally stopped from telling not only the world, but also the state that this thing is a damn problem. We need to respond right now. And the free flow of information has become quite a big problem as to how many people have really died in China, what is the true extent of the problem. And instead, what we've seen is, in lieu of that free flowing of information, we've seen the state just bear down on societies there in a very repressive way, to be brutally honest. I mean, whole cities, a city like Wuhan with 12, 13 million people, completely shut down.
In fact, the entire province, I believe. I mean, with a population the same as the UK, 60 million people.
Crazy stuff.
How do you do that?
But this is what I want to put to you. You and I, as liberals, would rightly say, or people just believe in liberty, period, and not assume things, that's absolutely crazy, and that's the logical conclusion of, you know, pushing the sort of idea that the state ought to control all aspects of society, including speech. Mm. But those on the other side might say, but no, hang on, it's not. That kind of stuff is fantastic. The state should have those sort of powers. How are they wrong, David?
Well, the problem with China is that an awful lot of people have been lifted out of poverty because of the way they do things there. So it actually is quite a good advertisement to a lot of people who don't, you know, really understand a lack of personal freedoms. They think, oh, this is fantastic. Face recognition thing, you're only allowed to use the trains if you behave like a good citizen. You're not allowed out of your own province if you're a bad citizen, if you don't pay your taxes. And in many ways, you think, well, that gets rid of all the rubbish in society, doesn't it? If you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. Mm. Therefore, that's wonderful. On the other hand, we're beginning to see in the UK and others, you know, that the police will knock on your door for hate speech. Mm. They probably won't arrest you yet, but they will say that you said something inappropriate on your Twitter account. Now, that it was unthinkable. Oh, well, I mean, 20 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, but certainly 20 years ago, you would never have actually had that. We had really cruel cartoons in the UK, and I think to an extent they still do. But if you go back to Gilray and Crookshank, I mean, cartoons around about the time sort of George III were frighteningly vicious. And that was the whole point, that you were allowed to be vicious. I grew up in a period where, obviously, it was the establishment club, it was privatised early days, Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, the sort of, the beginning of the satire movement, if you like, pre-Monty Python, but, you know, Beyond the Fringe and things like that. When Peter Cook did an impersonation of Harold Macmillan in one of the sketches, a very good one, that was groundbreaking. I mean, people were saying, you know, you probably should go to prison for that. Well, it never happened. Because you would never think of impersonating the Prime Minister. Now, an awful lot of people who would actually impersonate the Prime Minister and all sorts of other people as well. So things have changed. And I think the problem with China is, as I said, it looks, to all intents and purposes, that it's worked very well. The buildings have shot up. That story of the four hospitals being built in 10 days?
Yes.
Now, were they hospitals or were they something else? Were they giant crematoriums? The problem with the way they behaved is that nobody believes a word that China says.
Right.
And so that's what you do. So you have, in some ways, a benefit to a large number of members of society who don't really care too much. This particular doctor, we don't know what happened. We don't know whether he contracted coronavirus. We don't know whether he was got rid of because of his opinions, because he was likely to talk. We don't know how many other people have been got rid of. Maybe none, maybe many. But that is the risk, that you actually get known in the world as being not terribly trustworthy. And we remember all the James Bond movies, and they're not letting us down to this day.
Again, I laugh because you raise the. It's amazing how short-sighted people are. It's amazing how short-sighted people are. The very same people who would argue that those who they disagree with shouldn't have the right and the freedom to speak freely and express their views, will in the same breath not bat an eyelid when a politician then assumes that power, which was, demanded. Again, look, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. It's mostly the left who are doing this right now. And the left in various guises. I'm not going to suggest that it's only one grouping of them. It's really those individuals who we're seeing play out on these viral videos. Mm. If you search on YouTube, for example, demanding that free speech be curtailed for those who hold,
unhelpful. Lovely euphemism. Unhelpful opinions.
It's terrible. Juicy irony I wanted to get to is that it'll be those same individuals who then, when they have someone in power or when someone gets into power who they don't like, will then demand that they have the freedoms in order to protest that individual and the like. But what they never realize is that once you've ceded the power over to government, over to politicians, to be able to decide and pick really who can speak and who can't in society, that's it. You've lost that power. The very same politician who you now think should be protested and, who should make a noise around can quite happily use state power to suppress them.
Absolutely. And he might be your friend one day and he might not be your friend the next day. All the governments change as well and say, right, we don't really like anyone speaking out. I mean, Argentina had that huge problem. We fortunately don't have it. I think Zimbabwe has had it, or has it. And there are other countries that have it. I mean, it hasn't, in the UK and the US, it hasn't become a government thing. It has become, sometimes the police overstep the mark. And I think they're ridiculed in what is now known. Well, I thought what you and I would call the liberal or the centrist press, which of course is now labelled by the left, we're either extreme left or extreme right. So, I mean, I've always been very amused to see that whenever I write an article for the Daily Friend, I'm now subscribing to an alt-right white supremacist organisation. I don't know what you're doing here, frankly. Do you ever feel uncomfortable in amongst those white supremacists?
My goodness, I've run the name, or the gauntlet of names, rather. But again, let me take two steps back before we come back to where we began this conversation. This is part of the MO to a large extent. You've got to, and I see this play out a lot on, I recently, on my show, visual show. You can find that on YouTube by searching Big Daddy Liberty. This week on Wednesday, I released a talk I did, David, at the University of Stellenbosch, or Stellenbosch University, and it was entitled Ideas, Not Identity. And I go into this exact modus operandi into a little bit of detail as to how it's done, how the move from having an open society, an open space founded on liberal values, freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of ideas, etc., etc., slowly but surely finds itself becoming a space where people are fearful, genuinely fearful, of even just expressing a thought if it isn't sanctioned by the powers that may be in those particular cases. The point I was driving at, sorry, as I slightly lose my train of thought here, is you now have a situation where it's individuals who, for whatever reason, and in their various pockets, I mean, some do it because they see themselves as, you know, arbiters of what gender should be, and others do it because they believe they are the arbiters of what race should be. Mm-hmm. And again, it's on all sides, David. There's a group who I call the Blavity Blacks. These are these individuals who believe that they are the sole arbiters of what a black person should be. Blavity being a magazine in America for the sort of millennial woke types. So I call them Blavity Blacks. And on the other side, you have these, and it subdivides, the white individuals who, on the one hand, appropriate a guilt that they shouldn't appropriate for apartheid and colonialism. So you have these sort of self-flagellating white individuals who then, you know, deferentially speak about black people as, you know, being somehow, you know, victims, eternal victims.
I find that hugely patronizing because it really says, you know, blacks are really just children, that we need to look after them. You know, we need, I mean, they can't think for themselves. And thankfully, we woke whites can think on their behalf and object, as somebody did, incidentally, at the Frontship Literary Festival, and Bongani Madondo objected to that. Mm. But someone said, oh, on behalf of all the black people here, I'd like you to go to, I think, to Eugene de Kock, wasn't it? On behalf of black people who are either too drunk or too stupid or didn't know what was going on. That's the inference, in my opinion. I think it's disgusting. I think it's hugely insulting.
David, it is the worst thing ever, because you now have a situation where it's a very casual type of racism, and really I forgot who first coined the expression, but it's this idea of the soft bigotry of low expectations, the idea that you can only assume the worst, really, of these groups of people. You don't see them as individuals. You see them as these groups of people who you've ascribed a sort of label to them.
The oppressed. Exactly. Inverted commas.
And then you have the other side of it. Again, still staying within the sort of self-described whiteness that we're seeing, of those who may very well be overtly racist, right? But we, by the way, I must add, we're actually in David's home, and he has some very beautiful, beautiful clocks. You know, I actually admired them as I walked in.
Sorry, we're going to check that they're still there when you go, because we know what you guys are like.
Because, you know
what you guys
can't touch those black
folks. Oh, no, absolutely.
but I mean, like, we make fun of it, but I mean, some people genuinely think this way.
Yes,
people genuinely hold these views, that you can literally paint an entire group of people based on their race.
But I tell you, so I take that a little bit further. Not necessarily that point. We were talking about a little bit earlier on about the outrage. Now, I find that the corporates in South Africa and the corporates elsewhere are pathetic. When, for example, and I may not have the story exactly right, I think there was a bag in Woolworths which was the colours of the old South African flag.
Yes, Country Road,
and
the brand.
Something like that. Yes, that's right, Country Road, the brand. If I'd been Woolworths, I would have just said, grow up, you stupid little people, instead of rushing to take it off the shelf and apologising for anyone who might have been offended, blah, 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 blah. That is why the woke get away with it. It's like, I think I wrote the thing for Daily Friend a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you probably read it there, either there or possibly. Why is it they're like five-year-old children?
Absolutely.
And they scream and scream and scream until mummy buys them a nice lolly or an ice cream. And then they scream for something else because they know that if they scream enough, mummy's going to buy them whatever and say, darling, are you okay? Actually, society is mummy. And the society keeps giving them what they want because they keep screaming. What they actually need is a good clap around the head and say, if you don't behave, you're going to go to bed early without any supper or the equivalent.
And again, just before we go to our first break, And I'll have you on afterwards again, David. It's this weird insistence by, again, the Blavity types that they have the right to speak on behalf of black people firstly. And in everything they say, the starting point is that we're victims. And so when you see those three colors in anything, by the way, that must be a sign of apartheid coming back. That must be a sign of oppression. You then point out, as I did back then, actually, when the politicians started getting involved, because as they do on social media, that the very colors of the Gauteng government, such as Etoll's, the Johannesburg Metro Police,
yes,
are exactly
right.
The apartheid colors. Then they go quiet and they go, oh, yikes, maybe I shouldn't get involved in this one.
Yes, exactly. But, you're out of your league, buddy.
But David, I'm going to take a quick ad break, and then I'll see you after these short messages.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I'm in conversation with David Bullard, someone who really, to be brutally honest, I'm probably going to have on the show again and quite a lot, to be brutally honest, as I said. David, as we sort of enter the last 10 minutes of our conversation, I want us to really talk about, we've set out some of the threats that are faced by those of us who advocate for freedoms, including free speech and the freedom of thought, and these sort of people who make it their business to police these sort of things, whether it's free speech or free thought. But surely there is something that can and must be done to fight back. You mentioned this in the sort of beginning of this conversation that, you know, we're actually at the cusp now where there is a bit of a pushback. This is what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm going to be very sort of Western in how I look at this. David, the good. What can and should be done by those of us who advocate for freedoms and liberty to push back against this kind of assault on free speech?
Well, I think, you know, with social media, things are very different to how they used to be pre-social media, Twitter, Facebook, and all the rest. So you're not going to close that down. But what I have noticed on there, and I don't think it's the echo chamber necessarily, is quite a lot of perfectly rational people on Twitter and on social media utterly fed up with being told what to think by other people. So there is firstly that pushback of coming back and saying, don't be so stupid, or this is a view, or have you thought of this, have you thought of that? My general view on the thing is that you should just use humor and ridicule them, because, you know, if there was any substance to what they were saying, it would actually carry some credibility. And we would be thinking, my God, maybe they've got a point, maybe we should think about this. The fact that it is so ridiculous, the fact that the whole trans thing has become such an absurdity now. I mean, I do think that there are very definite cases, but there is nothing like the number of cases of people thinking they're in the wrong body than there are now. Virtually every adolescent child in the UK is now being convinced that he or she is in the wrong body. And so it's a little bit of a trend thing, you know, because the favourite girl in the class thought so she's going to become a boy, so we'll all become boys, and then at 17 we'll change our minds. That's a bit of an extreme one, but I do think that you should have views, you should be allowed to put your views out, and if somebody opposes those views, or if you get the woke bunch chasing you, well, chase them back. There's, you know, there's nothing a bully likes less than actually being exposed as a bully, and I get back to the corporate side again. They fold. They're absolutely pathetic. They should stand up for it. And we should stand up as individuals and say, no, this is absolute nonsense. And that's the only way to do it, really.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. And especially when you raise the issue of corporate South Africa, because I was holding my tongue a little bit on this one, because to a large extent, you know, I partly get it, but at the same time, it doesn't excuse the cowardice that we're seeing from them. I mean, these are the sort of people who, really, if you look at just the raw numbers, for instance, as to who's propping up the country right now economically, they are the engine room of what is a stuttering and a petering out South African economy. And they should be the loudest voices in the room and saying, guys, actually, this is the sort of society we want. But here's, I'll just, maybe just to digress a little bit, I'm going to put something to you. You actually sometimes find that they don't speak up because inevitably or invariably, they actually support some of the ideas that you get from those in political power.
Well, I'm not so sure that they do. I mean, the people I talk to, the corporate people I talk to as individuals, as social, think along perhaps the way that we do. I don't know all of their political opinions and views, but, I mean, they certainly think that there's an awful lot of nonsense. But I think that you touched on this earlier on about people being afraid to speak out. Now, when you're a corporate, and when you have the wrong coloured country, whatever it is, bag, and you've got the howling mob baying for your blood on social media, what do? You don't actually tell them to go and get stuffed. You actually capitulate. You sack the person who bought the bag. You do whatever they demand. And that is where the thing is, where we have the problem, because it's the hatred can be whipped up so quickly, and it's righteous indignation, you know, in its real sense of someone says, oh God, you know, Bullard said this, or Big Daddy said that, or Sir said this. No, therefore we should deny them
platform. When we
did the IRR thing last March, about a year ago, there was an academic, Charles Lindau, I think his name is, at Stellenbosch, and there was a big letter in Business Day. You know, it's very dangerous to have David Bullard at Stellenbosch because he's the poster boy for the alt-right or the extreme right or whatever. Happily, the university ignored it, and we went ahead, and we had a very successful evening, as you know.
Didn't people disagree?
I arrived early expecting to be pelted with eggs wearing some quite old clothes, and there were just a load of very pleasant students calling me Uam and saying, after you, you know, you were first at the bar, you go and get your beer first. It was a very nice evening. And thankfully, not everyone gives into that, but university chancellors or vice chancellors are giving into these things. Lecturers are giving into these things, was if your students all go and they say you're a disgusting bigot and we don't like this, you must apologize now in front of the entire class. Now, here we've got someone who's been in academia for 20, 30 years. We've seen this in the States. We've seen this in Douglas Murray's book as well. Right. Apologizing to a group of 19, 20-year-olds for his existence before he loses his job and goes elsewhere. That's unacceptable. And I do think that corporate South Africa, as you say, they are the guys who hopefully are guiding us out of the sort of mess we're in at the moment. We need to see their balls, I'm afraid. We need to see their got balls, at least.
Just very briefly, let me maybe explain why I say that you might find that in some cases, in fact, in a lot of cases, I can kind of almost substantiate this, you don't see a vocal pushback from corporate SA. Is that one has to remember that the very toxic ideas that are anti-free speech, anti-liberty, that are taught in South African universities, again, taking cue from United States universities, these postmodernist critical theory intersectionality type ideas, that argue that we're various groupings and there's a hierarchy of races and genders and the like. The very same sort of ideas that these students learn at university, well, they carry on with when they become graduates entering the corporate world. And I often find that you may have an older generation in the workplace who don't get it, and still fight for, you know, those liberal ideas of free speech and the like, but they're facing this growing number of employees who are sort of indoctrinated in that way of thinking, and it can be very difficult and toxic even in the workplaces for you to hold the line and say, guys, no, actually, freedoms apply across the board, including even for you guys, even though I disagree with you. But again, I digress. In the last 3 minutes that we have, and oh my goodness, we could have talked for much longer. David, I want us to maybe to forecast a little bit and look forward, because we spoke about the dangers of giving politicians these sort of powers, and you're sort of seeing a South African political elite, including, you know, the ANC and the EFF, who are becoming rather emboldened in asking for more almost surveillance state-type powers. You know, it sort of really began, it garnered attention in the media when they first proposed the media tribunal. Remember
how that's forgotten
about this?
Yes.
And other essentially repressive type laws around we should be able to control what so-and-so says, or at the very least subject them to some tribunal, if you will. David, why is this dangerous as our last call?
It will be sold to the public as for their benefit. We must protect you against these people because we don't know what they're doing. But I think that there are enough, I think South Africans are, many are free-thinking enough and clever enough to know that this will not be a great idea. And I'm talking right across the world. I'm talking the guys I chat to at petrol stations before my car up, and we're always quite interested in each other's political views. And everyone says, all the wokies says, oh, that's only because you're white and they're just saying what you want to hear. I don't think that is the case, guys. For some of the things I've heard, they said, certainly weren't what I wanted to hear, so that was it. So I think that we're probably quite a strong country, and I honestly believe that there will be a fight back against it, but with the help of people like yourself and the IRR and other organizations to say, guys, don't just accept this, because, you know, it's in the politicians' interest to actually gag us. Absolutely. And it ain't going to happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Mr. David Bullard, renowned writer, and really you've got to follow his written works. You'll find him on various platforms, from Politics Web, The Daily Friend. Remember, you can find a lot of stuff, news, analysis, and opinion on The Daily Friend, dailyfriend.co.za. And, David, thank you so much. How do we find you online, on social media?
I'm just on Twitter at lunchout2, the number, at lunchout2, because I lost the first one and I was suspended the other day, so I'm trying to behave myself a little bit more at the moment and not be banned completely, but,
Well, you and I are both at this stage, David. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great pleasure.
Thank you, dear listener, for joining me on this, very nice segment. Again, you know, these are the sort of guys I want us to hear from, you know, interesting ideas, a wealth of knowledge and experience. After the break, we will finish the last segment of the show as I look at what trended on social media, and we'll look at, of course, a new segment, who the Moomish of the Week is going to be.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
A major thank you once again to David Bullard for that segment. I apologize for the sound quality. I think load shedding had its way with us and maybe affected the machinery a bit. I hope it wasn't too bad. But as always on the show, in the final sort of 8 minutes or so, we look at not only what made social media headlines, you know, what trended over the week, but of course, you know, some of the big news items that I think you should be looking out for going into not only this weekend, but also into the next week. Guys, I must begin at the top. Oh, yes. And the new segment, which I'll be sharing with you, is the Moomish of the Week. Who is the Moomish of the Week? The loser, if you will, of the week. We'll get to that a bit later. Let me begin at the top of what I think is dominating not only international headlines, but also local headlines now. The coronavirus is now, I mean, the World Health Organization has essentially said, look, this is a full-blown pandemic, something which every single government, every single private sector, public health provider, and of course you and I need to pay attention to and do exactly what the experts require us to do. And there's a lot of information around that going around. But a very interesting observation that the World Health Organization made yesterday, which is that this is a controllable pandemic, they called it. Now, I don't know if they're saying this to try and reassure us that they are at the top of the issue and that, you know, not that I will say don't panic. I think there should be a reasonable amount of alertness from us. Not panic per se, but alertness. But I do hope, for our sake as South Africans, that the South African government truly has its ducks in a row, because they've essentially appropriated for themselves the primary and, in some cases, the sole responsibility for dealing with this this pandemic. And if you're going to do that, really, you have to have your ducks in a row. With that being said, I think all of us do have a responsibility to do what we need to do to get things under control. I mean, the United Herzliya Schools have instituted a, let's call it a soft lockdown, or quarantine to an extent, by asking kids not to come in for the rest of the week, because of a suspected case of coronavirus at the school. And you're seeing this sort of play out in other places too. My own office, my own workplace, I mean, we issued an email basically saying, look, this is getting pretty serious. And, you know, aside from the regular precautions, as I said, you know, regular hand washing, avoid touching your face, blah, blah, blah. You know, if it gets any more serious in terms of the number of cases in South Africa and the rate at which it may be spreading, I mean, even more serious, precautions might be taken. For example, people staying at home, especially if you have already symptoms of flu-like type conditions, including, I mean, one which really surprised me, given the kind of work I do, you know, precautions around not even traveling. So I look at this and I think to myself, it can't be said that this won't hit our economy. It cannot be said that this will not hit our economy. If you've seen what's happening in Italy, if you've seen what's happening in China, and it may be argued that maybe China is on the rebound now, slowly,
one gets the feeling that what they went through, that dip in their economic fortunes, is now, much like the flu, spreading to the rest of the world too. And I worry about that in a country like South Africa, which already isn't seeing much in the way of growth, and is going through a really tough time economically. Well, what will this really do towards our economy? I know that the United States is very attuned to this risk. I mean, just this week, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, you know, issued a message to Americans in an address where he basically took three major decisions. Number one was to shut down all travelers from the EU for the next 30 days from coming into the United States of America. That is a massive, massive move, bold, gutsy move that was done by President Trump. This is in addition, of course, to other restrictions he's already placed, including travel from China and South Korea and the like. So, again, there are drastic moves being put in place here. I mean, the Australians, their Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, announced a $11 billion coronavirus package. Again, major, major, major action. And I just don't get the sense right now from a South African government that's appropriated the sole responsibility or the major responsibility of responding to this, that they are necessarily doing much to stop the spread. And I think it seems as though the major impetus from them is response and not necessarily precaution. But I could be wrong in this, but it doesn't look like it, given the modus operandi being employed by other governments around the world. So this is one that I think we need to definitely watch. And guys, as I sort of head to my final minute, time does fly when I'm having fun. I wanted to raise perhaps who I think the Moomish of the week is. And it comes back to what we maybe discussed before my interview with David Bullard. I think my Moomish for the week has to be the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane. I mean, right now, she's now embroiled in a scandal, once again, having just suspended her head of the Free State branch of the public protector's office, who, for allegedly having, or suspending him, excuse me, because it is alleged that he sent an email to her asking her to resign after that North High Court bloody nose that she got. So, again, if this is the response, according to what we're seeing in the media, by her, a sort of hyper-defensive and now lashing out personality, after quite rightly perhaps being found by the courts to have not done her job properly, then there's no other way to describe this as a Moomish of the Week move. And on that note, let me say thank you very much to all of you for listening to the show. Guys, I am on the road for the next sort of 2 weeks or so as I travel across the country, trying to, you know, put together some content and grow the channel. And, please do follow me on my social media by going to @BigDaddyLiberty on Facebook. Follow that, like both the Big Daddy Liberty page and the Big Daddy Liberty Show page on Facebook. And you can also find me on Instagram, of course, by searching Big Daddy Liberty or the Big Daddy Liberty Show. Guys, thank you so much. And remember, I will see you next week.